they do. This is what they do. And we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. But time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence. At the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming, and it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Not giving up. Revolution Radio.
When you attend a funeral, it is sad to think that sooner or later those you love will do the same for you. And you may have thought it tragic, not to mention other adjectives, to think of all the weeping they will do. But don't you worry, no more ashes, no more sackcloth, and an armband made of black cloth will someday nevermore adorn a sleeve. For if the bomb that drops on you gets your friends and neighbors too, there'll be nobody left behind to grieve, and we will all go together when we go. What a comforting fact that is to know. Universal bereavement, an inspiring achievement. Yes, we all will go together when we go. We will all go together when we go. All suffused with an incandescent glow. No one will have the endurance to collect on his insurance. Lloyd's of London will be loaded when they go.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal, where I am so delighted to be back on Revolution Radio again, and I have a repeat from one of my most favorite guests, Rolf Lundgren, who's an expert on polling with a degree in mathematics from UW-Madison. Not an easy achievement, may I add. He's very active in Republican and, in the past, libertarian politics, and I wanted Rolf to come on to talk about the latest poll swings just to provide a framework for Rolf's discussion. Days after both conventions come to an end, multiple 2020 polls swing toward the president, and they're all moving the same way. Joe Biden's lost ground since the close of the Democratic National Convention. He and President Trump are now running neck and neck in the latest Rasmussen Reports weekly White House Watch survey. President Trump's support among black voters rose 9 percentage points. During the Republican National Convention, a new Hill-Harris X poll finds. According to the latest monthly Democratic Institute Sunday Express poll, President Trump has 48% of the popular support over Vice President Biden's 45. In key swing states, the gap is even bigger, 49% for Trump, 42% for Biden. Rolf, that's very impressive. Your comments, your thoughts, what's going on?
Yeah, well, the polls are tightening. The mainstream polls are tightening. And I see the latest betting odds are now on Real Clear Politics has it 50% for Biden and 49% for Trump. So that's almost a tie right there. There's several reasons why the polls are swinging towards Trump. One of them is the convention. The Democratic convention didn't help Biden, because first of all, Biden already gets good news coverage all the time anyway. And by picking his vice presidential pick, then remember the Democrats are divided into demographic groups. Each group thinks that they have to have people from their group. So when they pick Kamala Harris, although she covers many demographic groups, she doesn't cover all of them. So part of the reason is that the demographic groups left behind by Kamala Harris are now more likely not to vote for Biden. The biggest chunk would be the Bernie Sanders supporters, who are essentially left out after two straight primaries where Bernie got second place. They've been left out on the ticket. They didn't even get a silver medal for the VP. Remember, they got Tim Kaine last time. So that's one of the reasons. That's the reason why Biden didn't do better. There's also a question whether minorities really relate to Kamala Harris. The media says that she's a minority, but you know, she's not really a minority. She's really from a privileged background. She's not really, you know, she didn't have handicaps in life because she was a minority. So on the other hand, you look at Trump, he got a bump out of the convention because he got some good news coverage for a change. The other networks besides Fox had to spend some time covering the campaign. The convention with all those great speakers, including Trump's final speech, and many people who watch those other networks like PBS, MSNBC, whatever, haven't seen any good coverage of Trump before. They've never seen it, so they, by seeing it an hour or two, that could affect their opinion of Trump. They might think he's not so bad after all. So that's one reason why the polls are closing. But there are other reasons why the polls are closing. The polls done in the summer tended to be polls of what's called adult voters or American adults. Well, American adults can include people who aren't registered to vote and people who simply don't vote. So those polls tend to be slightly better for Democrats. Okay, so that's one thing. Now some of the polls are starting to switch over to likely voters. Some of the polls done in the summer were also of registered voters. But as we know, not all registered voters actually vote. So registered voters tend to favor Democrat candidates as well. Well, now when you do a poll with likely voters, that's better for Trump, because actual voters are more likely to vote for Trump than registered voters or just adult voters or non-voters. Another factor is the polling that said that, you know, there's been polls out, and there's a poll just today I saw that says that Biden's ahead by 11%. I think it was a USC poll, which I haven't heard of their polling before. But they claim that Joe Biden is ahead by 11%. That's a national poll. Okay, the closer you get to the election, the less relevant national polls are, and actually they're already pretty irrelevant. But the polls that matter are the polls in the pivotal battleground states like Wisconsin, like we're at, or Michigan, Pennsylvania, Minnesota, Florida, North Carolina, and maybe Arizona, people think is a battleground state. Those are the states that the polling is really matters. So if Biden's ahead by 11% in a national poll, but he's losing in Wisconsin and Michigan, then it doesn't really make any difference if he's at 11% in the national poll, because there is no such thing as a national election. We have what's called the Electoral College, where each state has their own identity and gets to vote for president in a separate election. So that's another reason why some of the polling might be coming back towards Trump. But there are other reasons why the polling is starting to move towards Trump. Trump actually has more voters that agree with what he's doing and what he says and what his positions are than Joe Biden. That's probably the biggest. That's one of the reasons why he won the last election, is with something. It's called messaging. And what it means is if you take a focus group of 100 people and go through the positions of Trump on the issues and go through the positions of either Joe Biden or Hillary Clinton on the issues, more people agree with what Trump's positions on the issues are. So that's a big advantage for Trump. And the closer you get to the election, the more people actually pay closer attention to the actual positions on the issues. So that's another advantage for Trump. But there are other reasons why the polling is moving towards Trump. And I think that the two biggest reasons I haven't even mentioned yet. Do you want to hear what those are?
Of course.
Okay, here's the two biggest reasons why the polls are going to move towards Trump. The first one is when you do a poll right now, or if you did a poll during the summer and you said, who are you going to vote for president? There's a lot of people who don't like Trump and they don't like Joe Biden. They don't really like Joe Biden, or they don't really know who he is. So those people will tend to pick Joe Biden in a poll. Because they said that if they don't like Trump, they'll say, oh, yeah, I'll probably vote for Joe Biden. Okay. Well, now the closer we get to the election, the more people are finding out who Joe Biden is. He's mentally disabled. He has no positions on anything, it doesn't seem like. He doesn't have any vision to do anything. He's running a very weak campaign, very similar to Hillary Clinton, and also very similar to the campaign in 1948 by Thomas Dewey, who lost to Harry Truman in a big upset. And Thomas Dewey in that election didn't campaign very much, didn't say anything, and didn't hit the swing states. And then he was ahead in the polls, but then he lost the election. Well, the same thing's probably going to happen in this election, because Joe Biden isn't campaigning very hard. He's not hitting the swing states. And he's not saying anything. So the point is that if you have a voter out there who doesn't like Trump and doesn't like Biden, they're probably not all going to vote for Joe Biden. And once those voters go back to 50-50, then that's a big advantage for Trump. Because people are finding out the negative aspects of Joe Biden. Part of it's because of negative advertising against Joe Biden, and negative advertising works. Joe Biden has a long record in politics, which really has nothing to do with what he's saying right now. You know, almost everything that Joe Biden is saying right now, he's had 50 years or so to do it. He was first elected in 1972, you know, and none of the stuff that he's talking about now has he ever done before. So a lot of people just don't believe that he's going to do anything. I mean, does anybody believe he's going to even Democrats believe Joe Biden's going to do anything? I mean, he'll pick Democratic judges, right? He'll do that, right? But what else is he going to do?
I think most
he didn't do anything about.
Yeah, I think most
is he going to do anything about corruption in government, corrupt corporations? Is he going to do anything about you know, the globalism issues? What is he really going to do? Is he just going to reverse everything that Trump did and go back to Obama? You know, I don't think anybody knows. He hasn't really said what he's going to do. He just doesn't like Trump is really what he says. So I think that's already starting to show up in the polls. I think the polling is already starting to indicate that some of these people who said they were going to vote for Biden in the summer are not saying they're going to vote for Biden because they realize that Joe Biden is not a very good candidate. He also has many corruption issues. As we know, he was in the meeting with when they were spying on Trump. There was that meeting in the White House on January 5th, 2017 with Barack Obama and Susan Rice and Sally Yates and James Comey, where they were talking about spying on Trump. There's also the issues with Hunter Biden dealing with the Chinese and with the Ukrainian government getting these big contracts. There's other issues with other Biden family members. There's a Jesse Biden, a James Biden, and a Frank Biden. I think they're brothers, and they've got, there's a lot of corruption issues. So, you know, people, Trump has gotten rid of some of the corruption, but it, there's more that needs to be done. Does anybody really think that Joe Biden's going to clean up any corruption? No, he's not going to clean up corruption. He's, how would he even know about the corruption? He's got a, we don't even know how his decisions are being made. He's got some sort of committee of people making his decisions for him, apparently. He probably has some input in the meetings, but he probably, remember, Joe Biden has always been a yes man his whole political career. He's always had these powerful advisors telling him essentially what to do, and it's probably even worse than it used to be. So I think that that's one of the factors in the polling. But there's, and there's one other factor in the polling that's very important. It probably is not showing up in the polls yet, because it won't show up in the polls. It'll only show up when the voting is done on election day. And that's the people who don't want to tell you that they're voting for Trump. Now, the last election, the polling was way off. The state polling was way off. They were wrong on a lot of states. They were wrong on Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Florida, and North Carolina. They were also way off on states like Iowa and Ohio. They, even though Trump won those by large margins, the polling didn't predict margins that large in those states. And the polling companies had a big conference. It's called like the Polling Consortium or something like that, the International Polling Consortium. They had a big conference after the election to figure out what was wrong with the polling. And according to their conference, the problem they did is they did not wait for education in state polls. And what does that mean, waiting for education? What they didn't do is they didn't make sure that their sample size had the proper ratio of people who were college educated versus people who were non-college educated. Apparently they were doing this in the national polling, but not in the state-by-state polling. And why would that matter? According to their conference, it normally doesn't matter, but according to their analysis, white, non-college educated men were much more likely to vote for Trump, but they were also less likely to do a poll. That's what this conference found. So that, therefore, when they did their sampling, they had too many college-educated white men and not enough non-college-educated white men. So therefore, Trump was underrated in the polls. Apparently, college-educated white men are more likely to vote for Trump than non-college-educated white men. So that's what they found at this conference. So you would think that all of the pollsters would be waiting for education, making sure their sample sizes were balanced for education. But apparently, virtually none of the polling companies are waiting for education, except for Rasmussen poll. So they're not even trying to be honest. If they already know that that's why their poll was wrong, why aren't they doing it? Because they just don't care. Because they want polling that shows Biden doing better, at least right now or during the summer. If Biden did well all summer, that probably helped him with fundraising and getting endorsements. So they just didn't care if the polling was accurate, is really what it comes down to. And, of course, the news media doesn't care about if their other news reporting is accurate about Trump. So why would they care if their polling is accurate? Right? But one thing you have to remember is in 2016, people didn't want to do a poll for Trump. That's much worse right now. It's hard to quantify it, but if people didn't want to do a poll for Trump in 2016, just think how many people don't want to do a poll for Trump in 2020. Okay? Now, it's hard to quantify this information, but one way I saw it quantified was another poll, of course. So maybe the poll wasn't accurate, but maybe it was. The poll said that, and I'm going to use round numbers here, half of Democrats didn't want to share their opinions with others about polls or about politics, but three-quarters of Republicans didn't want to share their opinions about politics. So if that's true, if that means people don't want to do a poll, if you translate it to that and make that assumption, that means if you call 1,000 people, you're going to have twice as many Democrats doing a poll as Republicans. Because Democrats are only one out of two aren't going to do the poll, but maybe Republicans are three out of four aren't going to do the poll. And actually, a lot of people don't want to do polls, by the way. That's another problem with polling, is they have to call thousands of people to do a poll. Just to get 500 people polled, they have to call thousands of people, because a lot of people don't want to do polls. But if Republicans are twice as likely not to do a poll as Democrats, that means they have to keep calling and calling and calling to get enough Republicans in the poll before they can finally say, okay, we're done with the poll. But what if they're not doing that? You know, we don't know how these polling companies are run by the news media, many of them. Okay, it used to be considered a conflict of interest for the news media to do their own polls. Did you know that? Before the 1980s, news media didn't do their own polls. They were done by Gallup poll or something like that. But now the polling, the polling that you hear the most about is really mostly done by the media companies, ABC poll, NBC, CBS, CNN, and Fox. So there's already a conflict of interest with the media. The media used to report the news. Now the media is creating the news, their own news. And how many polls, by the way, have they done that they haven't told you about? What if ABC News does three polls this week, and one of them says Biden's ahead by 2%, and the other one says Trump's ahead by 2%, and another one says Trump's ahead by 3%? Well, what if they only release the one that says that Biden's ahead by 2%? Right? We have no idea what polls aren't released. Right? And Rasmussen Reports had an article out that there's been a reduction in the number of polls released recently. And they speculate that might mean that there are a lot of polls being done, but there's more polls that might be more for Trump, and they're just simply not releasing the polls. You know, we don't know. So there's a lot of issues with polling.
I think that's highly probable, Rolf, that they're so bad for the Democrats that firms the Democrats are using for polling, they're not allowing them to release the polls. Let me, while agreeing with all the points you made, add a few additional of my own. Number one, the Republican convention was far better produced than the Democrats, that right off the bat. I mean, the production values were overwhelming. The Democrats wouldn't even address the elephant in the room, which is urban violence. They said absolutely nothing about it. Only now that, you know, far partisan CNN commentators like Don Lemon and Chris Cuomo are saying that it's starting to show up in the polls, that the Democrats need to do something about it because it's hurting them. And they are belatedly, but way too late, too little too late, attempting to address it. And of course, needless to say, blame it on Trump. Number two, even CNN during the Republican C-SPAN, during the Republican convention, was taking callers from the Democrats and the Republicans, and they got so many Democrats calling in to say they were switching to the Republicans, that they were going to support Trump, that C-SPAN actually had to change how they were receiving the callers instead of having them Democrat and Republican, because virtually everyone was saying they were supporting Trump. They had to change it to Trump versus Biden to even get any Biden support on the air. And in the third place, and in many ways even more significant, blacks are going heavily for Trump. They can see the Democrats have been using them for 30, 40, 50 years. The Republicans did a brilliant job of featuring prominent blacks who are making key and telling points so bad that the Democrat supporters among what's left of the residual black community are calling out those who spoke out in favor of Trump, Uncle Toms. In other words, they're trying to run a rearguard action to put them back in their place, which is outrageous. It's too little too late again, Rolf. I think for all these reasons, Trump is going to win a landslide election in November.
Yeah, he could win a solid victory. I agree that there's been prominent Democrats have pointed out that the Democrats were way too late to the party on this urban violence issue. Michael Moore has come out and said something about that. Local radio host Sly in the Morning has been talking about it. And I think Bill Maher, if that's how you pronounce his name, he's talked about it. And then there's a guy named Goodwin.
Yes.
I forgot his first name. Goodwin. He's married to Doris Kearns Goodwin.
Right.
I think it's Don Goodwin.
Richard
Goodwin. Yeah, he also said that they made a big mistake on their handling of the urban violence. Essentially what these riots are, and this is how cynical and racist really the news media is. These riots, which started about, 3 months ago now when George Floyd was killed. The reason why they're promoting
Rolf, hold that thought. We'll take it right after this break. We'll be taking
calls
second hour. Stand by for more from Rolf Lindgren. We'll be right back.
Travels to Earth through the rainbow crystal bubbles from the furthest reaches of space and time, across the dimensions, through the elements, and in harmony with the colors of the universe. Through her mastery of abstract stream of consciousness malapropisms, she weaves a web of comic, satiric, cosmic conversation. Her subjects can range from Norman, the goose next door, to astrology and earth changes, and into the deep recesses of the soul matrix. She holds a wealth of knowledge on herbs, plants, and astrology. Join Mona and her guests on Adventures of a Feral Hippie as she touches the earthly radio waves 5 days a week at 2 p.m. Monday to Friday on Studio B at Revolution Radio.
Radio every Wednesday 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
All right, good day wherever you are in this world. I hope you're having a great day here listening to Revolution Radio. Everybody asks for this. Revolution Radio. Where the information never sleeps.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal, with my special guest, a return engagement from Rolf Lindgren. Rolf, we were talking about how mob violence was not addressed by the Democratic National Committee and how very prominent Democrats are suggesting that was a grave mistake, where it's appearing increasingly that mob violence will decide the 2020 election. Your thoughts?
Yeah, well, the reason why if you haven't noticed, the news media is promoting whether they're called protests or riots or whatever they are, the media is certainly promoting them. One thing they're doing is they never mention that they don't have masks on. So everybody's worried about masks and spreading the coronavirus, except for when there's an Antifa protest or Black Lives Matter protest. So you might say, well, why are they doing this? Well, they're doing this. It's a cynical way for the media to promote minority voter turnout. That's what the whole key to this is they're trying to engage minorities so that they have higher turnout. We know that the voter turnout for minorities was very poor for Hillary Clinton in the last election, and it's frankly on track to be even worse this time. So that's why they've been doing this for 3 months. They've been promoting these riots for 3 months. The problem, of course, is if you promote the riots too much, then other people who don't like the riots, like maybe business owners or people who live in the suburbs or maybe people who live downtown or maybe people who live in the country, I mean, almost anybody could find a reason not to like these riots. They may be sick of them. They may have people who have been hurt by them. They may notice that the riots never really are specific about what their demands are. You know, they're upset. The rioters are upset. Well, what are they upset about? Or, I mean, we know what they're upset about, I guess, but what's the solution to these issues? So a lot of people are probably sick of it by now, and it's probably starting to affect the voting. We know that Nixon ran, I don't remember this as I'm not old enough, but I know Nixon ran a so-called law and order campaign in 1968. I'm not really old enough to comment on that, if this is similar to that or not. It may very well be similar. I know the average person does consider public safety to be important. So that's an issue. The other issue you talked about was the Republicans had a lot of prominent black speakers at their national convention, and what Trump is doing is Trump is out there campaigning for every vote. He's looking for people. He's looking for votes from people who don't normally vote Republican. And there's a lot of reasons for minority people to say, hey, the Republicans are what I'm looking for. And here's some of the main issues. One is school choice. Okay, the Democrats have turned against full school choice. As of this election, the Democrat Party does not support school choice. Obama and Clinton have always essentially gave lip service and tolerated school choice, but no longer. That's one of the reasons why Cory Booker didn't do well in the primaries. He was one of their better candidates. Well, he was the only one that supported school choice. Okay, so that's one issue. Another is abortion. You know, a lot of Hispanic people are Catholics, presumably don't like abortion. A lot of black people are Baptists, conservative Baptists, who do not like abortion. There's a lot of people that are sick of hearing about abortion, and they don't want to vote for the Democrat Party. It's one thing to have abortion legal. It's another thing to have it being promoted by the government, mandated in insurance, and paid for by taxes. Another issue for minorities that Republicans are emphasizing is reform of crime bills. President Trump signed the First Step Act, which shortened prison sentences, helps people who are coming out of prison get a license so they can get a job, things like that. Trump has pardoned some people, commuted some sentences of some people. I think he's going to do a lot more of that in his second term. And that's a big deal for people who have been affected by the criminal justice system. And on the other hand, Joe Biden is well known that he voted for the 1994 crime bill, which locked people up and threw away the key, especially on drug offenses, which are nonviolent. In my opinion, the drug war is blatantly unconstitutional. And unless you can prove there's a victim of the crime, I think that drug cases are bogus from the beginning. And anything to make the drug war worse, which is what Joe Biden did, is a bad thing. And anything to make it not as bad, like the First Step Act, is a good thing. So that's another reason. And then, of course, minorities are just like everyone else. They want a better economy. And Trump had the economy raring to go until the virus shut it down. Really, the Democratic governors mostly shut it down. But it's widely believed that Trump is much better for the economy. He's deregulating and he's cutting taxes and things like that. So a lot of minorities simply just want a better economy and more opportunities for jobs. So there's a lot of reasons for minorities, and frankly, anybody who has a disadvantaged background to support President Trump. He's for all the people in the United States. Now, I want to talk about one other election besides, since we're talking about minorities. Did you know that there's a candidate in Michigan for U.S. Senate named John James? Have you heard of John James?
No, go ahead, Rolf.
Okay, he's a great candidate. This guy's a really, really good candidate. He's a black guy. He's from the military. He's in the latest poll I saw, he's leading by 1.5% over incumbent Democrat Gary Peters. And he tells a great story how his great-grandfather was a slave, his grandfather was a sharecropper, his father was an electrician or something like that, and then now he's a businessman, a former military, and now a Senate candidate. This guy would be a great addition in the U.S. Senate. Trump really likes him. And Michigan, of course, is a pivotal state in the election. It was the closest state that Trump won in the last election. I believe he won by about 17,000 votes in Michigan. Very close. So any poll that shows that John James is leading in Michigan is a sign that Trump is probably doing well in Michigan as well. John James, by the way, has outraised his opponent four consecutive quarters in fundraising. And it's also well known that when incumbents lose, they often lose because they're out-fundraised by their opponent. So that's a good sign. Although there are some seats where the Republican incumbents are being outraised by Democrats. So keep that in mind as well.
I want you to talk about Kenosha too, Rolf, because it seems to me we're getting reports from Kenosha saying they're voting for Trump. And I think as Kenosha goes, so goes Wisconsin.
Well, Kenosha is a very Democratic area. Kenosha County, I know, is Democratic, heavily Democratic. I think there's a lot of, it's a blue-collar area. But I believe that the voters are shifting towards Trump in that county. And Trump, remember that in Brown County, which is where Green Bay is, Obama won Brown County in the 2012 election. Okay, Trump won Brown County in 2016. So Trump took Brown County, and Brown County is also considered a blue-collar county. It's filled with blue-collar people. Okay, but this is a trend that we're seeing all through the Midwest, frankly, is that blue-collar people are switching from the Democrat Party to the Republican Party. It's happening in Minnesota as well. That's your home state. Minnesota, I think, is going to go for Trump. He didn't lose it by much last time, and I think that Trump is going to win Minnesota in the next election.
I agree completely, Rolf. He's going to win Minnesota.
I mean, if Joe Biden doesn't win Minnesota, what's his path to victory? And another thing I'll tell you right now is that Joe Biden's pick for VP, I would assert that Kamala Harris is a very weak candidate for the Midwest. Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Iowa. I don't think she's a good candidate in those places. I think she's a stronger candidate for Georgia, you know, Arizona, maybe Florida or Texas. She might be a better candidate in those states. Although in the primaries, we don't really know because she dropped out before they even started voting in the primaries.
Yeah, it was amazing, Rolf, that she was such a weak candidate. There were at least 15 candidates who survived better than Kamala Harris in terms of the primaries and the caucuses. So why would they even bother? Why would they reach down? It's like scraping the bottom of the barrel.
Well, she was the candidate. I think a lot of people at the beginning of 2019 thought she was the next Obama. She was being promoted as the front runner, and the way I always saw it back then was Joe Biden was the trusty Democrat, trusty generic Democrat. If everybody else fails, we can always go with Joe Biden and throw a candidate out there, you know, who will at least be a typical Democrat. And it's kind of interesting how that all happened because Joe Biden was not a very good candidate during most of 2019, but then all the other candidates flopped, including Kamala Harris, who was polling only around 5% in the polls for the last few months before she dropped out. I think she dropped out in early December, and she was only around 5% in most of the polls. And if you think about that 5%, think about how poor that is. First of all, she's from California, okay? California has, like, what, 15 or 20% of all the Democrats in the United States?
Yes.
Okay. So she wasn't even getting, apparently she was only drawing about 7% of the Democratic vote from California. So that's not a good sign if your home state doesn't even vote for you. The other, and then as far as the women vote, there was a lot more men running for president than women in the Democratic primary, but yet there's more women Democrats than men Democrats. So you'd think a woman would have a really good advantage in getting the only competition she really had was Elizabeth Warren and then later Amy Klobuchar and a little bit from Tulsi Gabbard, but she didn't get many votes. So women were not voting for Kamala Harris either. That's the point. Okay. And then you have another group is millennials. Well, she wasn't getting their votes. And then you have the minority vote, which is a huge percentage of Democratic voters, probably at least half of them are Democrat or are minorities. Okay. Well, she wasn't getting those votes either. So she wasn't really getting hardly any votes. And she was, and like I said, she was getting promoted by the news media. She was in all the debates and she just wasn't getting very many votes. So why wasn't she getting very many votes? There's a lot of different ways to look at it. One is that what did she stand for? You know, I mean, Obama got people excited about his campaign. He made you think he was going to change all the issues that people had with the Bush presidency. But with the Kamala Harris campaign, what is she going to change about the Trump presidency? Okay, because remember, most people agree with Trump's policy positions. Is she going to, you know, go back to the TPP and the Iran deal and the, you know, and the Paris Accord? And is she going to go back and put all these deals back together? Is that what, I mean, we don't really hear that from the Democrats, because that's probably not a popular position. Most of the positions that Trump is taking, is she not going to tweet? Okay, great. We can have a president that won't tweet as much. Okay. Are people going to vote for her because of that? Probably not. So what is she going to do if she's elected? If she's the, you know, many people think she may very well be the president if Biden wins. But I don't think Biden's going to make it for 4 years. You know, even if Biden did make it for 4 years and then didn't run again, then she'd be the front runner, because she'd be the VP. That's the stepping stone to be a front runner. You know, she doesn't have any accomplishments in her life or in politics. What accomplishments does she have besides getting elected? Okay.
The anti-lynching bill with Cory Booker, which was put over by the fake Jussie Smollett racial hate crime, where Jussie's her nephew campaigned for her and performed this stunt by hiring two Nigerian bodybuilders, one of whom is his personal trainer, the other an extra on the set where he was a role player, with a personal check for $3,500. I mean, Raw, picking her was so colossally stupid, I can hardly believe they did it.
Well, I wouldn't call it colossally stupid, because they had to pick somebody, and maybe they picked her because none of the other picks were better, you know? I mean, they had to pick somebody. So, you know, I don't know who would have been better. I think that having Joe Biden as the candidate is a bad pick right there. So I guess I can see the symmetry. If you have a white male, you have a minority female. I can see that symmetry there. You try to cover the four areas, but I think they were really looking at having maybe Amy Klobuchar or Elizabeth Warren, but then they changed their mind because of the riots. They are, remember last time they ran Tim Kaine was probably one of the weakest vice presidential picks in the history of the United States, at least since the 20th century. You know, I can't think of a weaker vice presidential candidate. I can't think of one. So most people don't even remember who the vice president was.
Dan Quayle comes to mind.
Dan Quayle, but at least he got elected.
Yeah.
So I mean, he wasn't very good. Yeah, well, he was pretty weak too. But like I said, at least he actually won the election. He got elected. So that's. But yeah, he was not a strong pick either. Yeah. You'd probably have to go back to the 1800s to find someone.
Well, of course, a lot of people would cite Sarah Palin, who I think actually lent some color and enthusiasm to the McCain campaign.
Yeah, I think Sarah Palin was a good pick. McCain had to roll the dice at the time, and he picked someone to roll the dice, and he probably wasn't going to win the election anyway. So,
Ralph, you mentioned
give it a good.
You mentioned the cynicism of the riots as an effort to draw up minority voters. I think that we can now see the Democrat game plan. I think it's just been announced here in a brand new article. I've got to run by you. This, to me, tells it all. A pro-Biden analytics firm, Hawkfish, says it's likely President Trump will appear to have won a landslide on election night, but may still lose after mail-in ballots are counted, which will take days, if not weeks, to tally. Get this. Way more Democrats will vote by mail than Republicans due to fears of coronavirus, and it will take days, if not weeks, to tally. This means Trump, thanks to Republicans doing almost all their voting in person, could hold a big electoral college and popular vote lead on election night. Hawkfish CEO Josh Mendelson said a scenario could unfold where Trump holds a commanding 408 to 130 electoral vote margin on election night if only 15% of the mail-in ballots were counted. Once all of the ballots are counted, however, the model predicts Biden ultimately winning a massive victory, 334 to 204. Now, I'll tell you, Rolf, right now, that is how they intend to do it. Massive mail-in vote fraud. That is the game plan. That's why Hillary's been saying Trump may not give up. This is Hillary's game plan. This is how Hillary wants the Democrats to defeat. And she still exerts such a grip on the Democratic Party. They're following it out. They're following it through. And I'll tell you, this Hawkfish company is instrumental in implementing this fraud on the American people. And the tells are like the following. The Democrats are turning to Trump. The independents are turning to Trump. The blacks are turning to Trump. So you would expect the mail-in ballots, if it were legit, to be at least split evenly for Trump or even more for Trump. But they're declaring, they're treating it as they will all be votes for Biden.
Okay, well, now that's an interesting article, and I think I saw that article. Now, I want to make a couple of comments. First of all, if you remember on election night in 2016, Trump was ahead in the popular vote on, you know, well into the evening. But by the time you woke up, somehow all of a sudden Clinton was 2 million votes ahead or something in the popular vote. Well, that was because of the late votes from California, mostly. And remember, Trump had a very poor turnout in California because everybody in California knew Trump was going to lose in California. Most people thought he was going to lose the national election, and the Republicans didn't have anybody running in statewide office for the most part in California. And the people that they did have running were going to lose anyway. So there was a really, really bad turnout in California. So now what this article is arguing is that we could have the same problem, but with the Electoral College, where Trump is way ahead, and then when they count the mail-in ballots, the Democrat comes ahead. Now, that's a worst-case scenario. I don't think that that will actually happen, and here's why I don't think it will actually happen. The first reason is Trump isn't going to let it happen. Trump doesn't just sit around and lose elections or sit around and lose anything. Trump isn't just going to sit around, okay? He already knows about this stuff. And he's proactive. What he's trying to do is limit the number of states that actually have mail-in ballots. And then in the states that do have mail-in ballots, he's going to hit is just as hard as the Democrats the mail-in ballots. And I'll tell you one advantage Republicans have that is not very well known is because of the COVID-19, the Democrat Party is not doing any door-to-door voter communications. Okay? Did you know that?
Yep, you've told me.
They're not doing any door-to-door communication. They used to have these lists where they have millions, they'd have millions of people knocking, not millions of people, but millions of doors knocked on by thousands of people all over the country getting voters to vote and everything. The Republicans are doing that. We're doing that right here in Dane County, Wisconsin. We've got people going door-to-door, knocking on doors, talking to voters in person. And think about it. If you have mail-in voting, it's a real advantage to have someone knock on your door and say, hey, I'm from the Republican Party. I'm from the Trump campaign. I'm here to help you. Are you getting ready to vote? Oh, you're doing mail-in voting. Do you need any help getting your ballot? Do you know how to do it? Do you have any questions? or can I come back in 3 days and help you, or does someone have to call you up? Can someone call you and help you over the phone? The Republicans and Trump especially, he's going to have people working these doors, making sure that older people, the people who are most likely to do mail-in voting, will mail in their ballots. So if the Democrats think that they're going to play the game of mailing all these ballots out, Trump is all over this issue. He's proactive. He's got the money. He's got the smarts. He's got the power. And he's got people door-to-door working doors, and the Democrats don't. And you know what? It might be weird, but think about this. Even in states like Montana is considered, some people think it's a key Senate race. Steve Daines is maybe a weaker than average Republican incumbent. The challenger is Steve Bullock, who's the former governor of Montana and was in the presidential race briefly. Okay, that's a race Democrats think they can win. Well, think about it. They're not doing any doors even in Montana. It's a state that has very low COVID-19 rates, very rural, but they're afraid to do doors because of their COVID-19 stance. Well, Steve Daines is doing doors in Montana. So is Trump. Okay? So think about that. Trump isn't going to get outwitted by the mail-in ballots. So it's something to be worried about. It's something to look at. But I'm going to tell you right now, Trump is not going to lose the election over mail-in ballots.
I can't begin to tell you what a joy it has been to have you on before. Have you on today. I've had you on before. I think this was by far your best presentation. Super spot on. I love it. If you could stay for fielding questions, that would be great. But I know you have other demands on your time.
I got to go to an event. I got a Trump event I got to go to.
Rolf, you could not have been better tonight. I'm just telling you, it was absolutely super. I'm going to give everyone the number. 540-352-4452. Mitchell will field the calls. 540-352-4452. Call Mitchell. We'll take your calls during the second hour. Rolf, you were just terrific, my friend. I cannot.
Well, thanks. So it's always terrific to have a host like you on the show as well.
Well, Rolf, really, truly, honestly, God, you are spot on. I especially appreciate your comments about mail-in voting. Really spot on. Excellent.
Yes, I wouldn't worry. Trump is already doing the worrying. He'll fix it. Don't worry.
Absolutely sensational, Rolf. Well, look, you have a great time at your meeting. Yeah, you're super. You're a good friend, and you're a wonderful guest.
Okay, thanks, Jim.
Thanks, Rolf. Well, I'll see you soon, my friend.
All right, bye.
Take care. I repeat, everyone, then, for calling in the second hour, the number 540-352-4452, 540-352-4452. Mitchell will field your calls, and we'll get you on the air, and I'm eager to hear from you about the issues we've been talking about here with Rolf tonight. Thanks. Again, I think the Democrats have laid it out. This is their plan. Pro-Biden firm Trump will be appearing to win in a landslide on election night. This is Hillary's devious plan. The woman is a monster. I see her fingerprints all over this election. The problem is, too little, too late. You can't win 2020 by a game plan that might have succeeded in 2016. Hillary's behind this, though, I guarantee 100%. Mitchell, surely we should have gone to the
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Travels to Earth through the rainbow crystal bubbles from the furthest reaches of space and time, across the dimensions, through the elements, and in harmony with the colors of the universe. Through her mastery of abstract stream of consciousness malapropisms, she weaves a web of comic, satiric, cosmic conversation. Her subjects can range from Norman, the goose next door, to astrology and earth changes, and into the deep recesses of the soul matrix. She holds a wealth of knowledge on herbs, plants, and astrology. Join Mona and her guests on Adventures of a Feral Hippie as she touches the earthly radio waves 5 days a week at 2 p.m. Monday to Friday on Studio B at Revolution Radio.
Radio every Wednesday 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
Good day, wherever you are in this world. I hope you're having a great day here listening to Revolution Radio. Everybody asks for this. Revolution Radio. Where the information never sleeps.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
I just got to say that I loved what Rolf was reporting here on the show tonight. I thought it was simply sensational. I'm very concerned about all of these issues. Biden, of course, is coming across as a complete goofus. He had another major blunder today. It was all over the internet that it was really bad how he's mucking up. So, you know, the idea that the idea that Joe Biden could pull off, you know, a landslide victory, as this pro-Biden analytics firm Hawkfish suggests, is absurd. The only possible interpretation makes any sense is this is the Democrat game plan to steal the election. They're trying to plant the seed so it doesn't come across as a complete and stupefying reversal of results. This is just the way the corrupt mind of Hillary Clinton works. I guarantee you 100%. This is Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, Michelle Obama, the miscreants in the Democratic Party, Nancy Pelosi, Debbie Wasserman Schultz. These are all corrupt people, and this is what they have in mind to try to salvage an impossible situation. I'm really pleased that Giuseppe has called in. Giuseppe, join the conversation, my friend.
Well, first, I would like to state I stand with Jim Fetzer. I will always stand with Dr. James Fetzer. So just to let you know, I got your back. Some of the things that have been going on.
I appreciate that, Giuseppe. I think people may not understand that I was tossed under the bus by these guys, Dean Ryan and Mike Barra. I'd been doing this Real Deal Reports with. It was very successful until they got a little too big for their britches when I called them out for defaming Millie Weaver, who produced a spectacular documentary, Shadowgate, in totally inappropriate ways. I called them out while we were recording the show for committing various fallacies that I spent 35 years teaching students not to commit, the genetic fallacy, judging a work by its origin because they were saying Millie bad, but the video was good. Even if Millie were bad, it wouldn't offset the fact that the documentary is spectacular. Ad hominem, obviously dumping on Millie on all kinds of really inappropriate tabloid level grounds, where Dean was bemoaning how he'd even dated Millie's mother. How inappropriate is that? And then, of course, a special pleading fallacy, not talking about the merits of the documentary, which I regard as among the most important of the last 10 years. And for that, they threw me under the bus. I hurt their feelings. I called them out as being immature and unprofessional. I even edited the part out, Giuseppe. But when they went on the air trashing me and grossly distorting what had happened, I had no choice but to reveal it to the public. I was on with Michael Deacon on Friday, and then my own show on Sunday with Danny Siras, the third in a row about Shadowgate, and I even showed the whole damn clip. I mean, it's unbelievable, Giuseppe, to have individuals I'd supported. I was doing 90% of the work on that thing. I was doing all the stories, putting them together in PowerPoint, sifting them through, setting them up. Takes a lot of time. Then sharing with them to get fan mail, put it all together, record the show, which I would then host. And we did this like nearly 100 times when they decided to throw me under the bus because they couldn't take criticism. I mean, this is thin-skinned, immature, childish. I couldn't believe it.
Well, there you go. I was shocked to stumble upon that when I was a regular viewer and really enjoyed the repartee. But what I would say is when the time comes, if you want to get back into it, Scorpio and I would make better than able substitutions, probably a great improvement.
Oh, you know, Giuseppe, that's terrific because I've been contemplating. I'm going to be tomorrow talking about possibly doing my own show, and you guys would be excellent. I'm very impressed. I'm very glad you said that because your timing is impeccable.
Because I saw on some of the videos that they use StreamYard, and I'm learning that. So we can be pretty much self-contained. And honestly, Barra, he's interesting, but he's such a know-it-all lightweight. You know, I mean, he's, you know, when he wants to debate you about the moon landings and something weird about so many facts on the moon landing don't make sense. And Catherine Austin Fitz has really made a compelling argument of this breakaway civilization that's stolen at least $22 trillion, probably a lot more. And I think that there's the possibility that this hidden civilization could already be exploring the moon and planets and things. I'm not going to discount that, because what are they doing with all that money? But there is absolutely no way that they went to the moon with what you look at in the Smithsonian in Washington, D.C. That is not worthy of the rigors of space. And the, you know, how do you get those guys through the Van Allen belt? I mean, you've outlined it brilliantly. And so I guess we didn't go to the moon either, which I have version two, which I really think that's an excellent book, by the way.
Oh, yeah, and that's my favorite, Giuseppe. Of all these books, I like that book the best, because it's so diverse and varied. You know, it's not just a moon landing. It's Paul Fall. It's the first death of Osama bin Laden. It's the second death of Saddam Hussein. And then it's the World War II mythology. I mean, my God, you got it all.
You know what the common issue there is? That there are secret societies. There are things going back thousands of years that, you know, supersede generations because they're following the same plan century after century. There's a lot of strange things, unexplainable things that when you research it, I've been fascinated by it for 45 years since I was a teenager and could take all these books out of the library and such. And the point is there's so much more going on. And the common theme in that whole book is they represent a public narrative fiction that is, can be easily, like a balloon, a helium balloon, can easily be shot and release all the air. But the average person likes to live in this comfortable Overton window, and they do not want to ponder the greater truths and the great lies that are involved in every one of those mass fictions.
Giuseppe, I just love everything you've been saying and suggesting. And look, I'm going to get back to you about doing, you know, reviving this show, because I really enjoyed doing it. I mean, it was effortless for me. I like the pressure. It's intense pressure to do a show day after day after day, because you got to put all the stories together. But it was something I really liked. There are very few persons in the world about whom that could be said, but I liked it. And I was trying to figure out how to get the show out. So you're talking about, you know, broadcasting on a similar fashion. We got to work this out in detail. And Jack Mullen, who happens to be my webmaster, I've also thought would be an excellent commentator, too. So we'll sort this out. We need a good name for the show. We'll figure it out, Giuseppe. But I'm really just delighted. I'm ecstatic that you have made that proposal.
Well, it can get better, too, because not only can we go live on YouTube, we can do this live, by the way, if you want, or we can broadcast. But this StreamYard allows us to also, if we're going to do something live a couple days a week, we can do a live on Facebook, live on Twitch, live on BitChute simultaneously. It's amazingly powerful multimedia.
I like it, Giuseppe. I like it.
And the reason I propose it is as follows. We are entering an unprecedented period in all our lives. The globalist parasites who want the so-called New World Order are out to destroy this sovereign nation. The next 120 days are vital to our personal freedoms and sovereignties. And we have to spread the word. We have to make the clarion call.
Yes, I'm with you 100%. I mean, these guys are just so vain and shallow that they put their own egos ahead of the show. And they falsified the history of how it had come about. It was because I called them out and then edited it out. My proposal to edit it out, because I thought it was so damaging to Dean and therefore to the show. They turned it around and said they had to edit it out, that I'd gone off the rail. And when you look at the video clip that was edited out, it was Dean who went off the rail. That was it for me, Giuseppe, that they would lie about my role in all of this when I'd been carrying the burden for the 100 shows. And then they'd toss me under the bus with a false account. If they'd been honest about it, If they said, look, Jim's been doing most of the work, but we just no longer want to work with him, I would have said, that's fine. They've actually come back with an overture wanting me to return, and I explained to them rather thoroughly why that would be, you know, insulting. I could not do that, and that if they had not, you know, distorted the facts, I would have been willing to consider it because I enjoyed it so much. But frankly, you know, it's now water over the dam. It's a bridge that has been, you know, this that bridge has been burned. I mean, it's all over as far as I'm concerned with them. If they can pull it off and they can do something more, my hat's off to them. But frankly, I was giving them 2 weeks without me. I think because they came back so fast, 2 days might have been a closer estimate. Because it's not easy to pull all this off. And they just took for granted they could do it. I found the whole thing shocking, embarrassing, acutely disappointing.
Well, here's what's interesting. I have been, like I said, I came upon your work about a decade ago. And I would often put it on when YouTube was somewhat unbiased. And I'd play guitar and just, I was amazed at how much I enjoyed what you did. And the thing about Dean Ryan, I've come across him over the years, and he has this diva-like personality, and he's always in some kind of drama and crisis. It's always, oh, man, this is going on with me. And so he's got some type of personality issue that he has to make himself the belle of the ball. And so yeah, he does have a certain charisma, and you know, it plays well on video. But when you see him do the same thing again and again, and he had the problem with Truth Be Told News, and he had the problem with Alex Jones, and he had the problem with Mike Adams, and it's always somebody else, you know, wronging our dainty little Dino. And you know, after a while, you got to wonder, why is the same guy always crying wolf that way?
I'm so glad you are giving this historical perspective, Giuseppe, because, you know, most of the audience doesn't have a clue what goes on in a situation like this. And they tend to believe the first account they hear. And in this instance, the first account they heard was a historical revision of the actual facts of the matter, which is why I actually, when I was on with a Michael Deacon show on Friday, I did a 2 hours or something on that order with Dan Handley, who's a former United Airlines pilot who's now with 9/11 Pilots. Dan was actually in Pakistan. And when Dan left, Michael, with whom I've done many interviews, I happen to like him tremendously, said there was an issue he wanted to discuss with me. And it was the breakup of the Real Deal Report group. And he actually played this piece where Dean was denouncing me. And where I said, look, I've got to tell you, because what he said was just completely the opposite of the facts of the matter. And I pulled up the clip because I'd gone out of my way to secure a copy of the part that had been edited out to make sure I was not guilty of the offenses they were committing me, you know, accusing me of. And I played it. So you got the soundtrack on the Michael Deacon show for Friday. It was really an excellent show, tremendous amount about 9/11. And then this little surprise episode, I didn't know he was going to ask me about the Real Deal Reports. But then when I went on Sunday with Danny Cirrus, it was our third in a row show about Shadowgate. And we discovered all kinds of stuff. Danny has an extensive background in law enforcement. He made fabulous contributions in detail how the whole arrest was totally contrived, not by the book. He only had one warrant, didn't even know what it was supposed to be for. It wasn't for Millie, it was for her husband. He took three persons into custody over what was, you know, an offense that her mother and she had this argument over the cell phone, and the mother had already dropped the charges. I mean, we just went through it in detail. And then I actually played the video clip what Danny and I were talking about. We got into this whole Real Deal thing because, in my opinion, Dean Ryan in particular and Mike Barra to a lesser extent were defaming Millie, and I thought it was totally inappropriate. And I actually played the clip so you could see it was Dean who went off the rails and not me. I mean, I found the whole thing astonishing.
You know, I have not heard the Deacon show, and I saw that you put – I like Danny Cirrus a lot. He's a sharp, sharp guy, real disciplined, and – I saw you put that up on BitChute, but I haven't watched it yet. But, you know, it's funny, Jim, that you get these people, especially these younger people, with these ongoing personality issues that instead of they try to carpet the world instead of creating themselves a new pair of slippers. And, you know, they don't look at their own issues, but they blame everybody else. And that's really too bad. But honestly, they were okay. But, you know, Scorpio and I and I forgot the gentleman you mentioned. Oh, Jack Mullen. And we could conceivably put together a roster of 6 to 8 people so nobody burns out. And it would be phenomenal. It would be so much better because I'm a trained journalist. My first 10 years of life, not of life, but professional life, were writing for the Milwaukee Sentinel when it was a real newspaper and doing morning radio on the largest FM station in the Milwaukee metropolitan market. And, you know, there's a lot of egos involved in any kind of media, even, you know, at the wonderful Revolution Radio. There's a lot of strong personalities. And I learned early in the game that, you know, I don't need to bring that to the table. You know, back in the day, even now, I'll rant to my wife, and I used to rant to my girlfriends or my brothers or something, but keep it private, right? Don't bring anything out ever in public. That's just classless. You know, I was raised to be a man of our honor, and you have to be a man of honor, especially in these days.
Yes, I agree completely. I mean, in an email exchange with him, I said, you know, Dean had a character flaw that was an inch wide and a mile deep. And it's something I had not discerned before. But, you know, this is just ridiculous. And I think your history about Dean Ryan and his interaction in these other situations and circumstances sheds light on what was going on here.
Yeah, it's always poor Dean is wounded by the other. And it's not, it's always Dean involved. You know, it's Dean in one, Dean in two, Dean in three, Dean in four situation. But the partner, the dance partner changes, but Dean's always in the dance-a-thon. So there's something going on there.
Well, I'll tell you, Giuseppe, you know, even as late as Thursday, they did this denunciation and from Shadowgate to Fencergate on Wednesday.
Yeah, I watched it. Yeah.
Even Thursday, before I had seen it, I was suggesting to them, okay, now you've vented your spleens, why don't we just move forward and we'll do a Fauci Friday, you know, where we focus on coronavirus, where Dean's not normally present, but Blake fills in, and then Dean can come back in Monday and we can just pick it up from there. Feeling they'd got this off their chest. And others contacted me and said, Jim, before you, you know, make any venture or consider, you know, resuming, you got to watch it. And it was when I watched it that I was just unbelievably astonished that they would go so far to distort the facts of the matter so completely. In fact, Michael Deacon said outright, he said he's projecting, meaning he's attributing to me what his own actions were at the time. And that's exactly correct. You look at the video clip, Dean was projecting. Very disappointing. I mean, I have felt very favorable feelings toward him. We had done a number of shows in the past. You mentioned Truth Be Told. Dean organized a couple of interviews we did. He's been at my home several different occasions. And we did one where he was doing an interview with me when I was doing a barbecue in the background. That was a very popular show. And when he and Blake were here, I mean, they stayed in my house. I mean, for crying out loud, you know, I mean, I felt good feelings about these people. So I was fairly astonished they would turn around and throw me under the bus. But that was exactly what they did. No one can watch it and not see it. And you say, did you watch the Shadowgate to Fencergate?
Yes, I did. I was shocked by, because I feel, you know, we've had a lot of conversations and I have a certain array of gifts. And one of them is I can read people pretty good. I've had a strange, problematic life dealing with a lot of odd people. And one thing it taught me long ago, like in my 20s, is how to read people quickly. And I could tell that you're a man of integrity. I've enjoyed our friendship that's grown from these conversations. And I'm like listening to this and I'm like, what? What? This can't be. This isn't the guy I know. And am I glad to hear your side of the story?
Oh, Giuseppe, yeah. You got the right drift. You understood the big picture. You just didn't know the details.
Right.
But we even have an email exchange that confirms everything I'm saying here. I mean, you know, I got these guys locked cold.
Wow.
I don't want to harm them. I just don't want them abusing me. And I had to set the record straight because they were not only defaming Millie, they were defaming me.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I haven't watched the Shadowgate thing because there's so much going on. And,
oh, it's so good.
I will have to watch it,
now,
though.
Look,
I will
look,
have to watch
listen it. To me. I put the whole show. Listen. They were also trashing Pete Santilli. Well, Pete and I have had our differences in the past. I'm not his biggest fan, but he did something sensational here by getting the Millie on, by then doing an interview with her two key whistleblowers. The conversation they had after he played the video was every bit as important as the video itself in certain ways. Even, I'll tell you more after the break. I'm here with Giuseppe. We had a sensational first hour with Rolf Lundberg. Call in, call in, call in. We're here.
You're listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Be evasive.
But that doesn't mean that they're telling the truth as opposed to fiction.
And Genesis chapter 6, verse 4, and there were giants in the earth in those days, and also after that, when the sons of God came unto the daughters of men, indicating that there were giants before the Nephilim.
And sons of God, plural. They weren't talking about Jesus coming down.
No, that's right. Yeah. Uh-huh.
I'm Steve Crawford, host of Factor Theory Live. Join me every Sunday night from 10 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Check it out.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job, that Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes. That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building. Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11, available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the Internet. Please help support this station so this battle can continue forward. Revolution, Revolution. Radio!
Hi everybody, it's me, the Fetch, host of Inside the Eye Live. Before the Sunday mainstream media, political pundit talk shows, there is Inside the Eye Live, where we break down some of the weekly mainstream media talking points before the talking points even get aired. Add in some entertaining stories, weather, cats, intriguing and informative guests, and you get one of the most listened to Saturday morning streaming media political talk shows going today. And it's all right here on our flagship station, Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. So join me, the Fetch, for Inside the Eye Live every Saturday morning at 10 o'clock a.m. Eastern. It is truly intelligent media for the politically aware.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, this is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal, where we had a sensational first hour with Rolf Lundgren, who has a background in mathematics. He's an expert on polls. He's very active in the previously in the Libertarian, now in the Republican Party, and he was giving us a breakdown where my greatest apprehension is that it appears to me the Democrat game plan is to steal the election using mail-in ballots. And Rolf, I found it very reassuring. Rolf was saying Trump's all over it and taking measures to ensure it didn't happen. Giuseppe, did you find that part especially fascinating?
Right. And I think that we also have to keep in mind that many people who aren't Democrats, such as myself, I'm doing a mail-in ballot. And I think there has to be some sort of integrity. And there's probably a lot of people who don't want to deal with the lines and the risk of COVID-19, whatever that may be, and being exposed to it. So I think that because there's such a I think it's going to fall pretty much along party lines, just like everything else does. And I think that they have to maintain some type of integrity with this. If they're exposed, it will just, really blow up in their face, I think.
But it's not going to fall under party lines. Look how I was reporting how C-SPAN had to change the way in which they were receiving calls during the Republican convention, because so many Democrats were calling in to say they were going to vote for Trump. So they Giuseppe, they had to change it from a Republican-Democrat call-in lines to a Trump-Biden call-in lines, because otherwise they weren't getting anyone calling in for Biden.
Oh, interesting. I see where you were going with that.
It was huge. It was huge. And the blacks are turning out for Trump like never before. Donald Trump will get the largest black vote of any Republican candidate in history. Because after all, when Abraham Lincoln emancipated the slaves, they weren't entitled to vote at the time. So I'm just saying, this is going to be huge. I'm predicting he could get up to 40% of the black vote, which, of course, in and of itself is enough to guarantee the Democrats couldn't win dog catcher.
Yeah, in some ways, my biggest concern is that they put up a buffoon like Joe Biden and a Jezebel such as Kamala Harris. And I love have you seen the altered campaign sign with the colors and the logo that goes Joe and Ho because of her history of how she used sexual favors
Willie Brown. Her affair with Willie Brown, which was well known in California at the time, Willie was about 60 at the time, and Kamala was half his age, and he put her on a couple of prominent cushy positions with a California legislature that she was really not entitled to have, to give her some prominence. And then she ran for attorney general eventually. She got a district attorney in San Francisco and did a miserable job with it. I mean, the history about Kamala is highly unflattering.
Oh, absolutely. I'll send you via Skype that meme. It's really funny. And the funny thing, where I was going with that is, the Soros is so adamant to destroy this country and its sovereignty that part of me wonders if they're not putting up Biden and Kamala to lose, because they had to know all this rioting, which they're also behind, and the violence that the great silent majority would never give an affirming vote to Joe Biden after what we are witnessing. It's just revolting. It's stomach turning. And the one place that you can send a resounding no is by voting for Trump in the November presidential election. And I wonder if this isn't always the intent, because these lunatics, these mentally ill reprobates, are going to go out of their minds when Trump's reelected, and they will burn things, they will destroy things. And I don't know, I'm concerned for a lot of the cities.
Let me just say, the most recent blog at jamesfetzer.org, NPR features leftist lunatic advocating looting in America. NPR, which is taxpayer-funded, Giuseppe, featured this woman, and in fact, if you look at her, I think it's not. It's a transgender who's promoting looting. Is, you know, she says, well, it's a really convenient way to get stuff for you, and it's a form of reparation. I mean, it's just insanity. And on NPR? I mean, ridiculous.
I'm looking at that picture. That, like, Austin Powers, Michael Myers character, that's a man, baby. That is a guy for sure. 100%. That is a guy. And that's what's so absolutely revolting to me and every friend I have. Like, I was born and raised in Wisconsin. My whole family's there. In fact, when I go back next time, I hope I get to have some of those ribs with you on the patio one of these days.
Yeah.
Excellent. And, everyone I talk to, and my various careers have had me make friends all over the country the last 40 years, and every single one is so offended by this ridiculous championing of the weaponized minorities, and the weaponized minorities are the violent black thug underclass, the homosexual deviant movement. There's a lot of nice homosexuals, decent homosexuals who want to have a family. And again, the key being the violent deviant subset of the homosexual population and the violent deviant subset of the Jewish population. All three minorities, that subset has been weaponized and is being funded by Soros and the globalist parasites that want the North American Union, that want the New World Order. And, you know, it has to be stopped. It absolutely has to be stopped.
I'm with you. I'm with you 100%, Giuseppe. I think you are spot on. You're right on top of it. Wow. I'm really glad you brought up this idea of you and Scorpio collaborating with me and Jack on doing a show parallel to what was going on there, because, you know, I think you made some telling points. You know, they really, I think, were more concerned with themselves and their image than they were with getting the story straight, though I think they did, for the most part, a good job of commentary. I mean, I would still be doing it if it weren't for them having flipped out because I called him out for being unprofessional and attacking Millie Weaver on personal grounds. It had nothing to do with the quality of her research.
Well, yeah, and getting to Barra, I've liked Barra over the years. You know, he's like one of the few men who's really embraced brand loyalty to the spray-on hair that was so popular in the 80s. You know, he's always trying to make it look like he has hair. And if you don't have hair, you don't have hair. Who cares? And then he also has to always talk about his virility and sexual prowess, which is inappropriate on a news show. I mean, so the dude's got his own insecurities, and I think that you know, that they, it was a great, to look at that as a great proof of concept, and it's a vital service that's needed probably for the foreseeable future. And that's the whole reason I got back into the mass media, is to offer truth and offer a sane perspective. And so that's what, if we put this together, and I don't see any reason why we can't, that's what we'll offer. And it will be much bigger than what they could offer, because, you know, the two of them have insecurities that were dragging you down.
Well, I love getting this objective critique, because I've been looking for that. I've had a fair amount of feedback from fans who were distraught, you know, and thought it was pretty outrageous. But it's clear, you know, that they think you know, they think they were the reason for the success of the show. Honestly, I'm not claiming I was the reason. I'm claiming it was the combination. It was the interaction. But I was doing 90% of the work, Giuseppe. I mean, there's just no question about it.
Well, one thing to his credit, Mike Barra did say in that from Fetzergate to Milligate show they put on, is like, I sat in for Jim and I couldn't be the host as well as he could. He's really good at it. And I'm like, there you go, man. There you go. Why did you bite the hand that feeds you, sillily?
And at the very tail end, in case you caught it, Dean said, you know, we wouldn't have the show without Jim.
Yeah, so, you know, it was
like the Democrats with regard to urban violence. Too little, too late.
Right, right. And I tuned in for the first few minutes of their new version with the two young women, and it's so unappealing. I'm like, nah, this has no magic, has no...
Are you talking about the Friday show? Because I haven't seen what they did Monday. I did watch that show on Friday.
With the two women, your two young women?
Yeah, I was very unimpressed. I mean, all four of them on the whole time, you know, and the one gal with all her tattoos looked bored to tears. I mean,
right. Yeah, classic resting bitch face, right?
It was a really bad way to go, to have all four of them showing the whole time. You know, I like to mix it up. They got upset because they felt, actually, when I did the gallery shots where you could see everyone, sometimes they had other things they wanted to do when they weren't being the featured speaker. So, you know, I mean, I mastered all the techniques of using Zoom. So you can,
that's cool.
You know, which I really like. I mean, it's a really wonderful technique.
Yeah.
But I thought that show was a bit of a disaster.
Oh, yeah. I turned it off after 5 minutes. It was like, I could see it was just going to be that. And I'm like, you know, time is precious. I was curious to see what they do. You know, it reminded me, Scorpio and I are both musicians, have been in popular bands over the years. And we talk about when he and I work together, there's a certain cool chemistry that, you know, like a good band, each person brings their talents to the band. And then when everybody's into it, the quality of the band is better than the individuals. And that's like what they did. And what you guys had was that same phenomenon. And then when they kick out the lead singer and all of a sudden they're left to go, it's really empty and has nowhere near the charm and charisma of the three of you.
Well, I think that's exactly right. I mean, I was providing the framework within which all this could go. And as some commentators observe, I mean, 95% of the time I was complimenting them on the excellence of their reporting. I mean, good God. And when they do something seriously wrong and I call them out, they take offense and toss me under the bus. I think that's a bit much.
Right, right. Definitely is a bit much. But again, as I mentioned earlier, in 40 years of either participating in the mass media or being a trained observer of it, there's a lot of big egos and a lot of big insecurities in the profession. And that's, I think, why many people are drawn to it, because they need external validation from other people. I was always drawn to it, and I think you are, because we're fighting injustice and we're fighting great evils. And which is the noble reason to get in that profession. But I think we're like maybe the 20% of it, and 80% is these narcissists and these insecure, wounded people who need the spotlight, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, yeah. I think you're spot on, Giuseppe. I think you're a very discerning observer of the human scene. It was, to me, a colossal disappointment, you know.
Oh, yeah. I mean, holy cow, that the early weeks when nobody else would step in and confront on a daily basis the monumental lies of the Gates pandemic scam, and that psychopathic lowlife had a decade to put together with his money, you know, a spider web of organizations, Gavi, the WHO, the... yes. You know, CDC, right?
NIH, CDC.
Yes.
Yeah, he's subverted them all.
Right.
You got a guy who's totally unqualified heading the World Health Organization. He's just a gate stooge. He's a puppet.
And have you
Nigel Ferguson with his model, his draconian model of 2.2 million Americans dying, 500,000 Brits if we don't shut down the economy now. It was just a monstrous fraud, a monstrous fraud.
Have you seen the video clip of that lowlife, I don't even have his name memorized, Teodoros, the WHO head?
Yeah.
He's in a gay bar, and remember the Dukes of Hazzard when Daisy Duke used to wear the tight short shorts and the little shirt rolled up just under her breast? He's in a homosexual bar in that outfit and wearing makeup and trying to look coy, drinking a foo-foo drink with an umbrella. And that's the guy who's the head of the WHO. It's unbelievable.
You're kidding me, Giuseppe.
No, I'll get you the
you're
clip.
You're kidding me. Yeah. I am shocked.
I wasn't shocked. I was like...
That's what they do. They get these compromised individuals. It reminds me of how J. Edgar had the sex dossiers on members of Congress, you know, that he could manipulate them. But the mafia had a sex dossier on Edgar, so that he couldn't even acknowledge the existence of organized crime.
Until the
Malachi hearings, when it was no longer politically possible to deny. And, you know, very interesting.
The Mossad before the Mossad.
Yeah, Giuseppe, Dominic's joining us from New York. Go ahead, join the conversation.
Hello, Dr. Fetzer.
Yes.
Just want to call in to support you. I've been following you for a long time, and I've seen you put Gordon Duff in the dust and Jeff Renz in the dust. So you just put these guys in the dust and keep on going.
Thank you, Dominic. I appreciate that. And Giuseppe is offering some support here in a way we can continue with this a show of this type and do it even better.
Sounds great. I know you don't allow political advertising, but I just wanted to repeat. Vote for Joe and the Hoe, 30330.
Yeah, Giuseppe's going to send me this Joe and Hoe thing. I can't wait to see it. It's ridiculous.
I just wanted to call in and let you know we're still out here and support
Thanks.
You.
Thanks, Dominic. Very nice. I appreciate the gesture. Thank you for calling. Excellent.
Bye-bye.
Excellent. Mitchell, I want to give you a shot here to, you know, say anything you'd like to add. I thought Rolf just did a wonderful job the first hour. I was so pleased.
I've been listening and watching, and that's why so many people are still here at Revolution Radio, where, you know, free speech really matters. And, you know, we don't try to fiddle with somebody's show. And
yeah.
That's why
I'm very enthusiastic about RR. I mean, I went to these video alternatives because I thought the video made such a difference and I like the time frame better. But, you know, I miss the audience. I mean, I had a very substantial audience here. And, you know, maybe with a little help from Giuseppe and Scorpio, we can do something to perpetuate bringing the truth to the public.
Oh, absolutely. But I'm glad you're back. And I know there's a lot of listeners that are glad you're back. It's always when you're building, there are always obstacles. So just overcome those obstacles.
Well, I'm not discouraged. I was just kind of floored. I mean, you know, it was such a form of betrayal, and it just took me aback. But I think Giuseppe's done a very deft job of outlining the broader historical perspective that makes a difference to understanding what happened here. Giuseppe, further thoughts of yours?
I think that it all comes out in the wash, as my mother used to say, and that's what we're seeing.
Yeah. Well, it's very damn interesting because ultimately, you know, it's one of these cases where you discover how much character makes a difference.
That is exactly right. And, you know, that's what is being lost in this vulgar globalist fake news media is they're championing these mentally ill deviants like the NPR lunatic that I'm looking at. I got to take that off the screen. That's just offensive.
I know. It's really a revolting image, isn't it?
It is a revolting image because it's against nature. You know, it's one thing to have certain mental desires, right? And you can, I mean, hey, if you want to dress like a woman, knock yourself out. But to be given the priority in society, like this deviance should actually matter. All a decent, enlightened first world society should allow is for that person to live his life and not be violently injured or killed. You know, they have the right to do whatever they want, and there should be a level of tolerance. Of course, you know, that's not what in reality occurs, because the typical people who are comfortable in their maleness or femaleness just see how absurd it is, and how either you mock them or you feel embarrassed for them because they're so off and they don't realize they're off. They feel like they're being true to themselves. And you know, an interesting thing, Jim, that most people don't even look at is why is there an increase in prevalence in such of this stuff? Well, in my opinion, it's because the environment is so toxic with this GMO food, and this they're using GMO soy, and soy has so many estrogen disruptors. And so you're feeding all these people, think they're giving their children healthy things with soy milk and soy. And the only type of soy the human being should consume is fermented soy, like the Japanese do. And so you're literally disrupting the normal hormonal balance of the human body.
We're feminizing men by the use of soy milk and so forth that's non-fermented?
Yes, without a doubt.
And then
every can of soup, every can of SpaghettiOs has got the lining bisphenol A, which is another estrogen disruptor. So I think it's intentional, a lot of it. They are trying to feminize the male population of the Western world.
I've been suspicious of that, you know, something like that going on for quite some time, but couldn't figure out what would be the etiology, how they bring it about causally. But what you're doing is identifying the agents that would make a difference here.
Yeah, it's rampant in the mainstream commercial corporate food sources. It's absolutely rampant.
Fascinating. Fascinating. Didn't you like, let me just go back to our guest the first hour. Didn't you like Rolf's critique? I thought it was just really terrific and spot on.
You know, Rolf's a fascinating guy. He's definitely, can back up his opinions more often than not. And he's reasoned and, he's a partisan, which most people are these days. And so, I always enjoy listening to you and Rolf's repartee.
I'm so delighted. I plan to take him out to dinner later this week.
There you go.
In appreciation. It was just so good.
Yeah. He's that's what we need, is people not just getting into the inflammatory rhetoric, like you said earlier, the ad hominem attacks where you're a libtard, you're a megatard. You know, nothing is served by insulting another person. Everything is served by discussion and debate, which sadly is becoming a more and more of a lost art.
I'll tell you, when I first moved down here in 2006, the Wisconsin State Journal was quite a good newspaper. And now it's frankly just a liberal rag. It's just totally propaganda. Every story they publish is non-objective. Every claim they make is spun, anti-Trump. I mean, again and again and again and again. It's sickening. If I didn't need to monitor how these stories are being presented, frankly, I'd cancel my subscription. It's why I watch, the NBC Evening News. I just need to see how the mainstream is pitching the stories so I know, exactly what's going on out there, because I have so many diverse sources. I know the facts of the matter even before they report them, their version.
You know, it's shocking to someone like yourself or myself to see the abject level of bold-faced, bald-faced lies that is coming from corporate globalist sources. I get a bunch of the daily emails from the Washington Post, and I am astounded that a once reputable newspaper such as that is such a propagandist CIA rag, and that's what they all are now. So.
Yes. And I, for years, referred to the New York Times as the Langley newsletter.
There you go.
Since Jeff Bezos bought the Washington Post, it's nothing but a garbage rag. It's not even suitable to line your garbage.
Yeah, I mean, it's sad. As a degree journalist, I have over 500 bylined articles in the 80s and 90s when I was writing professionally, and to see what it's gone. You know, now I have found a series of muckraking investigative journalists, some on the left, some on the right, and that's where I get my news, because these are actual people like you had on your show and I had on my show last week, Sarah Westall. I love Sarah Westall.
She's wonderful.
She's wonderful, and she's a valid news source, and there's many others.
Yes. Yeah. John Rappaport is very valid.
Oh, he's fantastic. Yeah.
James Perloff is pretty good.
Oh, I like James Perloff as well, right? The list goes on. Thankfully, the list does go on.
Yeah. I used to get such a boot of Colbert when he was doing the Colbert Report on, you know, comedy or whatever. It was so damn good, but he's just been sold out. He sold his soul.
Exactly
right. Giuseppe, I can't thank you enough. Thanks to Rolf for hitting me to the break. Thank you all. We'll hear more from us. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to Revolution.